Hey guys, it's Joey and Ray, and I am super excited to be bringing you season 3 of A Human Connection. And just like all the other seasons, we're going to be bringing to you some of the most influential people in this industry, some people that I have followed and have mentored me along my 30 plus year career in this business. So hope you join along with us so we laugh and we learn along the way. Well, hey guys, welcome to another edition of A Human Connection. Today, we have the guest of all guests. I am super honored to have with us today the one and only Tom Dempsey, official title Chief Distribution Officer for Integrity Marketing Group. He's kind of the Dos Equis guy of Integrity. He is always the most interesting person in the room, I feel like, in any room that he's in. So welcome, Tom. It's a great honor to have you here today.
Thank you, Joanne. It's amazing to be here. And I don't know as I've ever been called the Dos Equis man. But,
I'm glad I'm the first then. So yeah, I love the background. I love your view. You got a beautiful spot there in downtown Dallas. My favorite office to visit anywhere. So we're going to get to a lot of the good stuff about Tom and all of the things that you have incorporated in your career and in your personal life and in your family life. But we first met being part of the Integrity family. So why don't you give everybody a quick little bio of how that transpired, how you got there, and a little bit more about your background, Tom.
All right. Happy to. So how did I get here? You know, there are days where I wake up and I do wonder that myself. My journey started in financial services in the late 90s. So I was fortunate to have played collegiate soccer. That paved a path to professional soccer for a couple of years. I realized very quickly I was not going to be paying the bills, as a married man. My father-in-law convinced me that I was not going to be paying the bills. you do know my daughter is expensive, right? And I said, oh yeah, I know. So, no, it was time. I knew that I'm 5'10", and a lot of the guys that I was working to compete against, you know, in the role that I was in, which was a defensive player, they were all, 6'3", 6'4", and just physical specimens. And so, God gives you different talents, and it was time for me. I lived out a dream, and it was time for me to move on to live out the next one. And started in financial services. I was a business major in college, didn't exactly know what I wanted to do, because I think one of the things that most people, when your children or nieces or nephews or anyone in your life gets to that sort of college age, and then they ask you the question, like, how did you know what you wanted to be when you grew up? And I think most are surprised, because they go, I actually, when my son asked me that question, he's a freshman in college now, he said, but how did you know you wanted to be in business? I said, I had no idea. I actually thought I was going to go into science. I wanted to be a doctor. And I guess I'm a doctor of some kind, but I'm definitely operating on people, but it's more of mine.
You're definitely on call 24/7.
Yeah, I am on call 24/7. But I got into financial services in the same way most people do. I needed to work. When I was playing professional soccer, I needed to be able to leave no matter what I was doing by 2 p.m. every single day. So I started actually cold calling a gentleman who was like a jack of all trades. He did everything from, securities business to insurance to equipment financing, like anything this guy could do to make money, he would do. But he allowed me the flexibility to continue to do what I wanted to do in terms of playing soccer. But he would hand me the yellow pages every day, and he would say, today you're calling upstate New York, so I want you to find a couple of businesses that need to lease equipment, and we're going to help them. So we'll get some of the margin on the finance rate through the bank, and so ready, go. And so my job was to basically get 10 appointments booked for him a day. And I didn't leave until I got that done. If I got 10, I could move on. And it was awesome. It teaches you a lot about sort of handling rejection pretty quickly. But I knew that that wasn't going to be the long-term play for me. So I started asking a couple of buddies who didn't, they came straight out of college and went right into the workforce. And I asked them how they got into the roles that they were in. They said, look, buddy, I went to a job fair. And so I said, great, when's that job fair? And it just happened to be a couple of weeks from the time I asked the question to a couple of different guys. So I went to a job fair in Boston, and at the job fair, at the convention center in Boston, there were every investment company on the planet was there. So I got interviews coming out of that with seven of them. Got job offers from all seven, and then picked the one organization that wasn't necessarily paying me the most, didn't make the highest offer, but they were offering me constant training. And so I went to Putnam Investments in 1999, got my Series 6, 63, and 7 at that moment in time, then got my 65, navigated my way from a sales desk to becoming an outside wholesaler. You know, when I was 24, I actually had a budget and a company car and all the things that, you know, you hear about. And I lived in New Orleans. So I've had a couple of journeys along the way. Like we tell people that my wife and I say that we are running from the law, because they say, wait, you've lived in Boston, New Orleans, San Francisco, Tampa, and Atlanta, and now you're working in Dallas. The answer is yes. Uh-huh. But I went from Putnam to WisdomTree, the ETF company, WisdomTree to Transamerica. And I was at Transamerica for 14 years. And that's when Brian Adams and I were introduced to one another. And here I am today. This is a little, it's about a year in college, 4 months later. I've been at Integrity. And honestly, it's been everything that Brian promised and more. So I couldn't be more excited to be in the role than I am today.
Right. Oh, my goodness. That's awesome. So I love everybody's stories of how they got to where they are. It's like the image that you see of the iceberg, where you just see this much, and then what you don't see is the miles and miles and miles below. I think so many people look at somebody like you, that you woke up one day, you went to college, and then now you have this job and all of this success. But so much of the road, the journey, like you said, to get there, I think is the most interesting part of anybody's story. I don't know too many people. I guess it's probably the circle I travel in, and maybe it's this industry. I don't know too many people that woke up, decided what they want to do, went to college or went to work to do that, and are now doing that very successfully 10, 20, 30 years later. I think it's some of those pitfalls, and I thought we were going to turn left, but we turned right. Those are the good stories, right? And that's where you kind of learn a little bit about yourself and push yourself a little bit. So I love everybody's journey, and we're all very happy that Brian did whatever he did to get you over here. And I'm sure there's days that you're wondering, did I do the right thing? This place is crazy busy.
it is. So I don't know if I've ever wondered if I did the right thing.
I know.
I do wonder if I would have loved to have had an opportunity to do this sooner, right? Because I feel like I could have made, more of an impact by now, right? It's a year and 4 months in. And my whole view on any time I'm in a new role. So at Transamerica, I held 5 different roles, right? So like throughout the 14 years, I just, got a new opportunity every couple of years. And, a good example is the last one that I was in, running all of their agencies and their broker dealer and their RIA. I vowed on day one to all of our agents, all of our advisors, that I'm going to leave this place in a better position than the day that I found it. And that is my measure of success. Like how many lives did you positively impact along the way? And I've never really questioned coming over here at all. I think, I think it's inevitable when someone is looking at a new opportunity. I hope most people already know this, and I actually just talked to one of my newest hires, Victor Sanchez, about this, you have to be confident in the fact that you are running to the opportunity and not running from something where you were, because no matter what, if you're running from something, whatever caused that challenge there is actually going to, you'll drag it with you, whether you like it or not. And so, I definitely was running to an opportunity, and, I am, I don't think I'm happy unless I'm very busy and feeling very productive. You get to a place in your career where you want more, and you want to make sure you're at the greatest potential opportunity that you can be at. So we're here. Here we are.
Here we are, and we're just getting started. Somebody very famous said that once.
I've heard that,
I can't believe we don't have t-shirts yet that say that.
We're just getting started.
So one of the things you said reminded me of one of the books that I read recently, which talked about adding value. Like his goal was very much in alignment to what you said. I want to, where I go, whether that's an event, a meeting, or a new job, I want to add value. If I'm not adding value, if I'm just taking something from the room, then I don't want to be there. I want to be adding value. So that made what you just said made me think of that quote too. Of, and now I think about that all the time, like even sitting in a meeting, like, why am I here? Am I here sometimes to listen? And sometimes that is my role. Am I here to inspire? Am I here to coach? Am I here to add content? Or am sometimes just here to listen? I think so much we're, especially all of us, we're very all type A. We want to get in, we want to get things done, we want to keep moving. We have a tendency to add a lot of words sometimes.
Yeah.
But aren't all of those adding value? So I when you said that, that's what made me think of that quote recently too, of that's a good thing for us, where we're at, and especially with an integrity too, of why am I in Dallas? Why am I here at this meeting? Why am I sitting on this council? Why am I talking to this other partner? There's always got to be something that we can bring to the table.
But, that's right.
And yep. You've definitely done that. So one of the things that I love your story, and I have heard you tell it, but I want everybody in podcast land to hear too, of the story of your father and the military upbringing and the story of how, yes, that may have shaped you and you may have begrudgingly fought against it in the beginning, but so much of your discipline, which I think also leads to your success, started with that. So tell us a little bit about that story, if you don't mind, again.
Yeah, absolutely. So my father was a retired Marine colonel. And if you know anything about Marines, especially colonels, there's an old saying that they are one step below God and working their way up. And so, and if you don't believe him, just ask him.
Yeah, I was going to say, they wrote that saying, right?
Yeah, exactly. He's 83 years old and still as feisty as ever.
Love it.
We in the Dempsey family call him the Colonel. We do not call him Dad or Grandpa or whatever. He's the Colonel.
Everybody, the grandkids, huh?
Everybody knows the Colonel. Was just at a friend's funeral 2 weeks ago. And so I saw a lot of my college teammates and my college coach was there. And you know, it was actually a celebration of life. And the first question everyone asks is, how's the Colonel? And so, and he's an interesting, you think I'm the most interesting man in the world. He is by far and away the most interesting. But look, he is the reason why I am who I am today. I mean, I think inevitably, as leaders, we are constantly battling and supporting, frankly, the characteristic traits that people have been, you know, it's the whole nature versus nurture. Most of who we are, yes, you meet babies and you can see their personality fairly quickly, but then for the nurture part, they develop their habits and skills, etc., through their development. And you're fundamentally being developed in your first decade of life. And so when we're leading people, we're actually constantly working them out of those bad habits that they've created over those years. And then trying to enhance the good habits that that they do without even thinking about it is just innate in them, and it's a part of who they are. You know, so the Colonel, every single day when I was, honestly, for as long as I can remember, the Colonel made us make our bed every single day. And I mean, like, legitimately make the bed. So I can make super tight hospital corners, and I have a very crisp fold. And it's because he would inspect the bed just as if we were Marines. And so, you know, I've talked about this, but Admiral McCraven has a book called Make Your Bed Every Day.
Yep.
And
yep.
When I read the book, I actually felt like my dad wrote the book, like, honestly, because it was it was just things that I do because that's how I was trained. And so, but it is, the whole idea behind that is that regardless of how well or how poorly your day concludes at the end of the day, you absolutely want to have one success throughout the day. And that is usually making your bed every day. And so no matter what, if you fail at everything else that day, you at least have one thing that you won at. Yeah. And honestly, I do it, you know, in hotel rooms, I do it everywhere I go. There is one exception to that rule that my wife will point out, that I don't make the bed if I get out first and she's second in bed, she'll make the bed. But the Dempsey house, all the beds are made at all times.
Does she do hospital corners the way you do hospital corners though?
I would say that my hospital corners are a little tighter than her hospital corners. But she definitely critiques my bed making as well. So
the big question, what about your son? Did that get passed on?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. He's now, I think, in month two in college. And he texted my wife like after the third week he was there, and he said, "So when I'm washing my sheets, am I doing this the right way?" And my wife was like, "Who are you? You're washing your sheep?" So you never know how much your children are paying, because we never made him wash his own sheets, you know. But but he definitely made his own bed. he does a really good job. But yeah, so you know, the my childhood sort of development has kind of led me down the path of honestly. A phrase that I used yesterday when we had a big group in, and Brian and I were speaking to him, and I said this, and I affectionately mean this, you know, when you walk around our facility or you see any of the attention to detail that's gone into integrity, you know, the phrase, how you do anything is how you do everything, comes to mind. And that is, you know, that's Brian Adams to a T. Like, he pays attention to details that you're like, why is the CEO paying attention to this? And it's because he expects, you know, the highest possible, you know, performance out of everybody. And so, but that's what the Colonel really taught me was, look, yes, everyone has their days where they don't feel like giving their best, but you have to figure out a way to actually grind through it no matter what. And so being raised by a disciplinarian, by, you know, the Colonel in and of itself, brought its own, you know, set of circumstances. But I do believe that the structure, the discipline, the organization, you know, and we can talk a little bit about this as well. But like, even in the DISC scores, like I am an S, which most people would not know. And you would assume that I'm a D, and I do have characteristic traits of being a D. But I will tell you that I was not surprised. Every psychological test that I've ever taken throughout the course of the last 25 years suggests the exact same thing, which is I'm constantly trying to sort of find that middle ground for individuals so that we can just move forward. Mm-hmm. And so from my perspective, you can trace this all the way back to my upbringing, which is when the Colonel said jump, you didn't ask questions, you just jumped. You know what I mean? If you were going to ask a question, it was just going to be how high, right? And that was it. And so, because of that, though, you start to understand thinking about how your actions, either your choices and the actions that you either take or choose not to take, actually do impact other people. So you start to actually take a little bit more of a middle ground and start talking about things like walking, you know, a mile in other people's shoes before you actually start either getting on them too hard or being too light on them. But you honestly never know how you know, what state of mind or what the situation is until you actually assess the situation. So that's from my childhood, and I 100% credit it to the way I was raised.
Isn't it funny, some of the things that I think as kids or as teenagers growing up that we fought the hardest against end up being some of the things that we're most proud of, as the fiber, the discipline, the following in line, you know, childhood and upbringing that you had, that's now some of the greatest qualities that's probably led you to build companies and build, you know, other people up. We share the S score. And I use the analogy, I like the walking in other people's shoes, but I always use the glasses analogy. When I sit down across from somebody, whether it's one person or 300, I take my glasses off and I have to see things through their way. And I think sometimes, not that one score or one type of personality is, I think we all have a little bit of all of them, but if there's a characteristic as a leader that I feel like I have to work on the least because that has become natural to me, is seeing things not today of what I want to accomplish with even this podcast. Why would Tom be proud to share this podcast with his family, with his coworkers, with his peers? Why did he even say yes? You know, so it's kind of those types of things that I feel like come a little bit natural, but are to some people, it's you have to work a little harder at.
Yeah, for sure. You know, what's interesting is, when you finally find the one person you want to spend the rest of your life with, it is odd to me how close in sort of relation my wife is to sort of, and she's type AAA. If I'm A, she's AAA. honestly, she is as much of sort of a straight and narrow, get stuff done, you know, type A personality. But she is the other reason why I am where I am today, because honestly, my father-in-law was like, hey, you know, my daughter's expensive. And he was joking, kind of, because she's super low maintenance. But honestly, she was the one who, when things weren't going as well as I thought they would go or what have you, she was the one that gave me a little kick in the butt and said, hey, man, no offense. Don't feel sorry for yourself, brother. Just go get after it, you know? So sometimes that's all you need is that take. But honestly, so from a disc score or any of that, she is the one person that I know is more, she understands other people's feelings before they actually oftentimes understand their feelings. Like, she's not a psychiatrist. I mean, yeah, she did. She was an analyst for a law enforcement agency, a very large one. You know, she did interrogations. Like, she was.
Oh, it's so interesting to me. Yeah. It's so
she's
interesting.
She's always had that talent of reading other human beings. And so she could tell me things about roommates or things that I wasn't picking up on that she was like, oh no, like, you need to be careful with that guy, because you're going to come home and find that he's like wearing your clothes. And I'm not joking. That very scenario happened. Where she, and then she was like, oh yeah, that was predictable. I'm like,
that was easy. That was easy. That's so funny.
Yeah,
I think that's so awesome that when you do find that person, and somehow, again, I think it happens over time. Is we hopefully in the relationship too know when it's time to say, all right, quit feeling sorry for yourself, go, and know when it's time to like be the biggest cheerleader too. I always feel like that, not to get too sad here, but when I lost my mom, I felt like that was the thing that I lost the most. I have a wonderful husband. I have a wonderful career. I have amazing kids, great friends. But man, she was the cheerleader of all things Joanne. Like, it didn't matter. If I got an A or a C, it didn't matter. Man, that was so good. You know, or whatever I was doing, she was so proud of my career and so proud of my kids. And so I hope everybody, I've told that story to others only to say, I hope everybody has that in their life. Like, who is your cheerleader? It doesn't have to be your spouse. Sometimes it's not your spouse by just sheer reason. It doesn't need to be, because otherwise that's not what we need from each other. But I feel like that's one of those traits too, that man, when you can find somebody that is your cheerleader of all things, you don't have to be Tom Dempsey in a beautiful corner office in Dallas. It could be, you know, you mowed the yard so nicely. You know, it just didn't matter. I hope everybody has that in their life. And I try to be that for people that maybe come in and out of my life that I know maybe don't. I think that's a big part of what I want to learn from you today too, Tom, of you. I can only imagine your life. I was going to say between 8 and 5, but those are not integrity hours.
No,
from the time you wake up to the time you go to sleep, you're pouring into others. Other people need, a lot of people need a lot of things from you. Sometimes it's advice. Sometimes it's yes or no. Sometimes it's help. Sometimes, again, we sit through the Ziegler Leadership Program again, that one of the greatest honors of my career to sit through that and to sit through it with you. But, you know, you always have space for somebody that needs just that. Hey, come on in, let's talk.
Yeah.
Where do you get that? You have a go, 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 go schedule. How does your brain stop and say, I think he needs 10 minutes of my time that would maybe change the rest of his day? How do where do you find that in your brain, and how do you know when and where?
So I would say that for me, this is a team sport, right? And so I'm fortunate in the role that I'm in and the position that I'm in. And with that comes responsibility. And part of that responsibility is to ensure that whatever our team needs, that we kind of pour ourselves into them. And I am a big believer in, you know, I think, and this is, you know, a lot of people may say, hey, look, this is super cliche or what have you, but honestly, we are in the people business and everything else is secondary to that. But for me, I am very giving of my time, frankly, but not with everybody, but, you know, integrity partners, yes, absolutely. And then honestly, you kind of tear it down from there. But it's just been something that I've always done, in the sense that I honestly think that you learn more, you know, about just how the business in this is really where it started. So when I first started leading people, I found that if I was able to sort of be disarming in the sense that, you know, just listen and not sort of be judgmental from the start, yep. that what would wind up happening is people would understand that they could come to me, you know, with anything like good, bad, ugly. They weren't, you know, the T-Rex manager that, you know, yep. we were describing where people tend not to bring them bad news because they don't want to get their head bit off. It's from my perspective, it is only my only reason to exist as a leader. And by the way, management and leadership didn't exist before like the turn of the century and the Industrial Revolution. And so this is like a new science that we're living. But frankly, it's one of those things where like the less you actually interject in certain situations, the more likely the people are to actually then trust you. Right. And the more they trust you, the more likely they are to come to you for anything and everything. And then there's the other school of thought where, you know, if I truly understand the scenario, then I have the ability to actually kind of control the scenario because I can teach those people how to fish as opposed to giving them a fish. Mm-hmm. And so they start to learn, hey, look, like Tom was willing to give time to me when I probably didn't even earn the time. But yeah. then in turn, what winds up happening is building the next generation of leaders. So my only role is to make sure that this organization from a succession planning perspective has the ability to continue long after I'm gone. Right? So 50, 100 years from now, did we actually put the right, you know, processes in place so that people felt as though they didn't have to sort of run anytime, you know, their leader came towards them, they were fearful of them. I honestly think that part of me was, because I had such a disciplinarian as a, you know, a parent, I actually thought to myself, I was fearful of going to my dad with any sort of bad news or what have you. So it is almost like me, you heard me say, you're always trying to work, you know, employees out of really the things that they disliked the most that their parents did and trying to emulate the things that they liked the most that their parents did, because you don't get to choose your parents. It's just, you know, you luck of the draw. And so for me, I always thought to myself, and my wife knows this about me as well, more than anybody, is I want to be someone that knows that I had a positive impact on every individual that I cross paths with, even if, by the way, we're delivering bad news, or even if we're, you know, trying to deliver a message of, you know, tough love to get someone to the place that they need to be in. Because ultimately, motivation comes from a couple of different things. And you know, sometimes people are motivated by money. Sometimes people are motivated by, you know, respect. Sometimes people are motivated by just the praise that you get. Like there's different reasons why people do what they do, and everyone's got a little bit of a mix of both. But time and attention is the one thing that every human being craves, is time and attention. Like they want to know that when you're with them, you're fully engaged, you're paying attention, you know, and a lot of times you don't have to say a word. I mean, honestly, you could try this at the next, you know, cocktail party you go to. Find a group of people that you actually don't really know all that well. Go and stand and introduce yourself. And then literally you don't have to say another word the entire time. You walk away, they're going to say, man, that Joanne is awesome. Right? Like just because you took the time to come and listen, and you really don't have to do a whole lot. But for me, I am giving of my time. But honestly, it's because people were giving of their time with me when I was young in the business and didn't know what I didn't know. But they saw that I was hungry and willing to learn. And for those types of people, I'm 100% down with giving them time and attention. For people that, you know, have this a sense of entitlement or kind of feel like they're, you know, in a position of power because of the position that they're in. You know, I never have ever thought for one second that you needed to have a title to actually be a leader, like ever. No. I told my son when he was going off to college this year, he's a freshman, he's on the lacrosse team. And I sent him a list of the 20 tips from dad as you go off. And one of the tips was, just because you're a freshman doesn't mean you can't be a leader and you should lead by example.
Yeah.
And so, and he's doing that. Like he sends us clips every day, and honestly, he's hustling, he's working his tail off. And I don't know whether that's going to be rewarded, because I'm never going to speak to his college coach about playing time or any of that. He's going to earn that. And by the way, if he plays his tail off and he doesn't play, then he's going to have to make a decision on sort of, does he approach the coach? How does he handle that? And so just trying to teach people how to think through different scenarios. But yeah, I have mentors, and those mentors were very giving of their time, and guided me in the right places. And so I am going to pay it forward and do the exact same thing.
I love that. So much of what you just said about leadership, and I always say that leadership and parenting are totally in sync with each other. And so everything you just said about leadership, when my kids were very little, I learned this from one of my mentors, and I'm so glad I did, is if they can't come to you for the little things, they'll never come to you for the big things.
That's right.
So just like, again, our staff and our team and our coworkers and our partners and everything else. So my kids are all adults now, living on their own, and I find myself texting them just silly things. Like, I want to know what TV shows they're watching on Netflix. If I see a silly thing on Instagram, I'm forwarding it. And now they're doing that, you know, back and forth with Mark and I as well. So it may not sound revolutionary or very important that, we talk about what they're watching on TV, but they know they can come to us and tell us silly things and talk about their roommate or talk about their kids now that they're having kids. So I loved everything about what you just said as well, but it's so applicable to parenting as well, isn't it?
It is.
So now you're empty nesters. What's that been like? You've had a couple of months, it sounds like. He's off to college. How's that been?
Yeah, it's been okay. It's a transition. it's a life change. It was so hard for me. Yeah, every hour of every moment was dedicated to serving the needs of this young man. And, you know, I would say it's probably been harder on my wife because I have the fortunate benefit of having traveled, for basically most of my childhood. Now I was around, some days, 2 days a week, some days, no days a week, and actually the pandemic was painful as it was with the country going through. It was a little bit of a blessing because there was like a 2 year period where the company I was at, basically said, don't come to the office, do not work. From your office in Johns Creek, Georgia, stay home and do the gig. So every day I got to see him wake up, go to school, come home from school. I was just around, ate dinner more often than not, got to go to all of his, high school soccer and lacrosse games. And that was amazing. But so to have him not around the house is a void. I mean, like, it's super quiet in the house. We have a Great Dane, so she's big, but we used to have four of us kind of traipsing around the house, now it's three of us, and it's definitely different. I would say it's almost like a re-entry period or re-engagement period for my wife and I, where we're actually getting to know each other once again, without sort of that third party in the house. But it's been good. I would say we definitely miss him. We've taken every opportunity and every excuse to, either have him. He came home last weekend. I went 2 weeks before and took him to the Premier Lacrosse League Championship game. He had a scrimmage for the lacrosse team a couple weeks before that. 2 weeks from now, we're going to his final sort of weekend of scrimmages and the golf tournament. So he's still our baby boy, and we're still going to engage at every year.
It's so hard. I remember when the last one left the nest. With each one, it was bad. But man, when it was that last one, I mean, I just was a zombie for days. My husband's finally, he's like, Joanne, this was the plan, right? Isn't this what we wanted? Our children grow up, they go off to college, they live on their own. Isn't that the plan?
Yeah, exactly.
But it just happened too fast. I mean, what is they say, the days are long, but the years are short when raising kids. And that's so true, because whatever you're in, you're like, I'm never going to be out of this, whatever this stage of their life is. And then all of a sudden, poof. There they go. But it's also the best part of watching them become pretty incredible humans too, has been pretty incredible.
True. That is true.
So one of the things that I have to talk about with you before we go is we have to talk music. You are one of the most interesting, you have one of the most interesting musical Rolodexes in your brain. I'd love to see your playlist, but talk to us a little bit about where that love of music came from, whether it's performing it or listening to it or applying it to every scenario. You have just the greatest brain when it comes to music. Where did that come from?
I was never really classically trained in anything, right? So I can sit down and like play the drums a little bit. I can pick at a guitar. I can play a little bit on the piano. My mother was very talented from playing the organ. We had an organ in the house when I was a kid. And she taught herself how to play it, but she could actually really play. And her side of the family has just sort of that artistic brain. like her dad was one of the artists, one of the original artists drawing Popeye on the cartoon
Oh, yeah.
Popeye. He
Okay.
also worked at Disney. He was an animator effectively.
Nice.
So we do have art in the family. But I, you know, I didn't, music was always on, you know, from the first
Yeah.
eight tracks in the, you know, in the family wagon. But yeah, that's right. Eight tracks for the kids
Please tell
watching
me
it
you
at
had a
home.
station wagon with the wood panels,
We did.
please.
We had a station wagon. Actually, kind of a funny story. My parents won it on Let's Make a Deal.
See, you are so interesting. That is
Yeah.
incredible.
Yeah, they won it. My dad was the devil, and my mom was pregnant with me. And so on her t-shirt on her belly, it said, "The devil made me do it." So, yeah. So, but the first songs that I remember are like, you know, honestly, songs in between like 75 and 80, like, you
Good
know, the Pina
stuff.
Colada song or
Yeah.
Barry Manilow, Barbra Streisand, Neil
Yeah.
Diamond, like the whole playlist. And my dad is 5 years older than my mother, so he actually extends all the way back to like Tommy Dorsey Band, things like that. So I've
Ah, the
always
classics.
loved it. So there's a variety of music, and I don't, my playlist depends on the mood because I think music is a very mood-related thing. And so I listen to everything. I'm not exaggerating. I went to a Barry Manilow concert recently.
Love
But I also was just at Metallica and, you know, yeah,
Not a
so
lot
I
of
mean,
not a lot of crossover there, I'm imagining.
yeah, well, in country, we, you know, we saw, you know, Luke Combs and like, we're just, we, so we love all me and the whole family loves all music.
That's so
And I don't know, it's
fun.
just always been around. And so when I was a young kid, like super young, 5, 6 years old, I would sneak into my oldest sister's bedroom, who's 6 years older than me, and she had a record player. And so she had records, and like the first record I ever heard, like I put it on and put the needle down, and it was the Sugar Hill Gang, and it was Rapper's Delight. And so everyone's like
Yeah.
amazed that I know every word to that song, but I would literally just listen to that thing on repeat, like over and
I
over and
love
over
it.
and over and over again. And so just that the beat and the whole, it's just how my mind works, honestly.
Yeah.
So when people make comments in meetings, I actually hear song lyrics when people are making comments or
You
have a
do.
statement.
You do.
I do think in movie quotes and song lyrics. And so I just, my, I remember oddly remember many, many songs. And so we, it's, I guess the world is the unfortunate or fortunate benefit as
Oh,
a
we
musician.
love it. What's
Yeah.
your go-to karaoke?
Well, it is Rapper's Delight. If it, and it depends on it depends on the audience, but it is either Rapper's Delight or like, Rob Bass and DJ Easy Rock, right? Because I feel like upbeat when you're doing karaoke, but I love like if there's, and I think you saw this, but I love the moody stuff too. So like, love singing Home Sweet Home, right? Like by Metallica, or I'm
Yeah.
sorry, by Motley Crue, or I love singing Beth by Kiss. Like
Oh, good.
so I range from love jams like
Yeah.
Christian all the way through, you know,
Yeah. I love
wherever
it.
I may come. So
I
you
think
know.
music says a lot about the person as well. So to me, your description there is you're very well-rounded. You are easily adaptable to whatever the situation is. You have a go-to quote or song or movie lyric for every conversation. To me, that's just another piece of what makes you, I think. So, last question on music, favorite venue for a concert that you've been to? Because I know you've been to a lot of live.
Yeah, favorite venue of all time.
Have you ever done
So,
Red Rock in Colorado?
yes, I've been to a concert
Okay.
in Rock. I love that. I actually prefer smaller, intimate, more intimate. So we, my
Okay.
wife and I, saw Sting in a basically the size of like one Broadway theater, like the Sanger Theater, or one of those theaters where they're like super small and only
Yeah.
like 500 people can fit into the place. So you like
Yeah.
you are literally touching Sting, like, you know, and it's so that those are the smaller venue places for me, are favorite venues. Like even bigger venues, I think it's situational because I, yeah, I can think back to 19, well, I guess it would have been 2000, it would have been maybe 2000 or 2001. We actually went to see the Dave Matthews Band in Foxborough Stadium in
Nice.
Massachusetts. And the song Stay, you know, where the one of the lyrics is the clouds rolled over and the skies open. So I'm not joking you. I think they timed it,
but it
literally started pouring rain, like right on us during that song. And so for me, like moments like that, I'm like, serendipity right here. Like,
you can't recreate that.
But yeah, like House of Blues are really cool places to watch because they're super tiny venues. And then, you know, we actually just saw one of my favorite bands that no one's ever heard of called Blackberry Smoke. And they're a Georgia sort of like, they sound a little bit like the Black Crows, but their guitarist is, according to Guitar Magazine, one of the top 10 guitarists of all time.
Oh, nice.
But they are an Atlanta-based band, used to play on Zac Brown's label. They tour the world. So like they're bigger outside of the US than they are in the US. But you can see them in front of like, you know, 500 people fairly consistently, and they're amazing. So I like the smaller, more intimate. I will listen to any music, any band at any time. And it annoys my wife because I'm like, let's go. And she's like, again? I'm like, yeah. So just
Are you a guy also like my husband that if it's a good movie, he'll watch it again, whether he's seen it once or 1,000 times?
Yeah.
Because there's always
so it doesn't even matter. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Old School comes on if I'm like flipping through the TV and like TBS and Old School's on, I'm watching it.
Did you just see you as a father having a son in college now? Did you just see there was some post yesterday that Will Ferrell also has a son in college and he went to like some big game day something and he's like doing the turntable?
Yeah.
I don't know if your son will let you in to do a little rap for his lacrosse team, but I think that'd be pretty cool. Yeah.
So I'd be lying if I didn't say that I've already been to a kegger at my son's college. That was the first visit. It was great.
And That's awesome. Well, I think it's obvious to everybody. It certainly is to me that this could go on and on and on. We need a part two. We need a Tom Dempsey part two. There's too many layers that we didn't get to yet. But truly, one of the most interesting people that I've ever had the pleasure of sitting next to, whether it's on a bus or in a conference or something like this. And want to continue these conversations. I think there's so many little nuggets that we can all learn to take back and make our teams better, our relationships better, our parenting better, and all of that. So I thank you from the bottom of my heart for sharing this time with us. I know you have 1,000 things and people waiting on you, probably knocking on your door right now, but we appreciate your time here, Tom.
Thank you, Joanne. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you. Everybody have a great day.